You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison.
The time is now 6 o'clock on the dot, and welcome to WORT's local news for Thursday, March 13th. I'm your host, Marcus Slayton.
And I'm Christina Leffring. In tonight's news, a new book shares Vel Phillips' story with a younger audience.
An Alder candidate says Madison needs to diversify its housing stock.
And in the second half, Transparency Talk recaps the Openness in Government Awards. Fishy Business prepares for warm weather angling. And Forward Focus checks in with Madison's flamingos ahead of the new season.
All these stories and more on tonight's news. But first, we'll go live to the BBC for some news from around the world.
I'm Stuart McIntosh with the BBC News. Hello. The United States has increased restrictions on Russian access to US payment systems for its energy and banking systems as negotiations continue about President Trump's ceasefire proposal on Ukraine. It follows a qualified response from President Putin, who said the idea of an end to hostilities was good, but raised questions about how it would work. Mr. Trump called the response promising. From Washington, Sarah Smith.
Donald Trump said he thinks that they're very close to getting agreement with Russia and that he's getting very good signals from Moscow, where, of course, his presidential envoy, Steve Witkoff, is there having discussions with the Russians. And he even said that he himself would actually love to meet with or talk with Vladimir Putin about this. But there was a kind of hint of a threat there as well, saying that it would be very disappointing for the world if Russia doesn't agree to this ceasefire, because, of course, this process cannot move forward unless Russia, along with Ukraine, both agree to this 30-day ceasefire to allow them to move into the next phase of negotiations.
President Zelensky of Ukraine has condemned Mr. Putin's comments as predictable and manipulative. He said the Russian leader was afraid to tell President Trump directly that he wanted to continue the war. Mr. Zelensky called for more sanctions to put pressure on Russia. President Trump has repeated his ambition to annex Greenland and make Canada a US state. He described the US-Canadian border as an artificial line and said tariffs would continue as the US didn't need their stuff.
To be honest with you, Canada only works as a state. It doesn't. We don't need anything they have. As a state, it would be one of the great states anyway. This would be the most incredible country visually. If you look at a map, they drew an artificial line right through it between Canada and the U.S., just a straight artificial line. Somebody did it a long time ago.
Canada has made clear that it will never become the 51st state. One of the main stock indices in the United States, the S&P 500, has confirmed it's officially in correction after another week of heavy losses. A correction is a drop of more than 10%. A fall, and the fall of the S&P has registered over the past 4 weeks. Our North America business correspondent, Erin Del Moore, is in New York.
It's been another difficult day on Wall Street, and this comes after 3 weeks of declines, an especially brutal week this week, as we've seen the global trade war booming and really causing a lot of uncertainty, seeing markets respond negatively. So today, we are seeing the Dow on track for its worst week since 2022, the S&P officially entering and even closing in correction territory. Even the NASDAQ is down today, and that's where we'd seen a bright spot earlier this week, with investors rushing in to buy tech stocks at their lower price point, buoying that end of the market. But today, just a bruising day on Wall Street.
This is the World News from the BBC. Armenia and Azerbaijan have agreed on the text of a peace agreement to end more than three decades of conflict in the South Caucasus. Both countries said negotiations had concluded, but no date has been set to sign the deal. Azerbaijan has been insisting that Armenia change its constitution to give up its claim to Nagorno-Karabakh. The territory was the focus of two wars. After the text was agreed, the Armenian Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan spoke to reporters.
The peace agreement contains a clause on the deployment of third country forces. This means that after the peace agreement comes into force, both Armenia and Azerbaijan should not deploy third country forces, with all the ensuing consequences.
The former president of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte, will make his first appearance before the International Criminal Court on Friday. He was arrested on Monday on murder charges linked to his war on drugs, in which thousands of purported dealers and users were killed. He's defended his actions, arguing he was trying to fight street crime. His supporters say he's been arrested because his family has fallen out with his successor, Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Prosecutors in Belgium have said they suspect the Chinese telecoms giant Huawei of benefiting from corrupt lobbying practices targeting the European Parliament. Judges have requested that the offices of two parliamentary assistants be sealed. Several people have been detained for questioning after raids in Belgium and Portugal. One person has been arrested in France. Huawei has told the BBC it takes the allegations seriously. Figures suggest that global sea levels rose by more than expected last year. Analysis by the US space agency NASA found they increased by 0.59 centimetres, well above the 0.43 centimetres predicted by scientists. That is the latest BBC News.
This is Marcus Slayton and Christina Leffring with your local news, coming to you from the WORT studios on Bedford Street in beautiful downtown Madison. And here are tonight's headlines. Susan Crawford and Brad Schimmel went toe-to-toe last night in their first and last debate before Wisconsin voters select the next Supreme Court justice next month. Abortion rights, the legality of the law that stripped bargaining power from most public sector unions, and the flood of campaign money from out-of-state billionaires topped the agenda for the one-hour debate hosted by WISN-TV in Milwaukee. Both candidates confirmed that the election results will determine whether the court will have a liberal or conservative majority in the coming years, the news site Wisconsin Watch reported. Schimmel, a Wisconsin County Circuit judge, said he regarded the 1849 Wisconsin abortion as a valid law, but conceded that he doesn't, quote, believe it reflects the will of the people today. Crawford said he is backpedaling from his prior support of the ban. Crawford, who once sued the state to overturn the collective bargaining law known as Act 10, said she would recuse herself from a similar case on the law's legality if it addressed the same point she sued over. But the Dane County judge said the issues in the two cases are different. Finally, the millions of dollars pumped into the political advertising over the race were a point of contention. Billionaire Elon Musk has financed about $10 million in ads supporting Schimmel, while billionaires George Soros and Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker are among contributors to a $1.5 million fund infusion to Crawford's campaign.
State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jill Underly appears to be backing away from a pledge to participate in a debate with her conservative-backed opponent, reports the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Underly blamed her hectic work schedule for her unavailability to face off with education consultant Brittany Kinzer before the April 1st election. Kinzer criticized Underly for depriving the public of a chance to hear the candidates engage in give and take. At least two debate venues were made available, but the two campaigns failed to reach agreement on the details.
Wisconsin joined 20 other states today in a lawsuit seeking to prevent President Donald Trump's administration for making deep cuts to the Federal Department of Education, reports the Wisconsin State Journal. The lawsuit filed in Massachusetts federal court asserts that only Congress and not the executive branch of government has the power to dismantle or disable the department. Administration officials claim the department will still be able to deliver key services, including distribution of federal funds, after it lays off about half of its employees. Wisconsin schools receive about $842 million annually in the form of direct aid and funding for school meals through the Department of Agriculture.
A contentious hearing over a bill that would prohibit gender-affirming medical treatments for juveniles was marked with catcalls and ultimately ejections from the Spectator Gallery in the State Assembly. The bill's Republican authors, Senator Corey Tomchick of Mawsonee and Representative Scott Allen of Waukesha, say they want to prevent children from having irreversible gender reassignment surgery, reports the Wisconsin State Journal. According to the medical information website KFF, gender-affirming surgery for patients under 18 is rare, with most treatment limited to hormone therapy and puberty blockers. The bill in question, AB 104, is part of a legislative package Republicans have introduced in the legislature over the past 2 weeks.
A move to use more fresh ingredients could improve the quality of lunches delivered to students in Madison public schools, but a plan to cook scratch meals at individual schools has been dropped. The Capital Times reports that the Madison Metropolitan School District's revised plan is to produce meals at a central location and distribute them frozen to schools in the district. The program was created after feedback from students and parents affirmed a desire to have fresher, more nutritious meals.
Three new shelters will open to the public this spring in Madison Parks, reports the Capital Times. At Country Grove Park on the southwest side, a $1.3 million shelter will feature restrooms, a small picnic area, and a parking lot. A new $1.2 million shelter at the beach in Tenney Park will offer similar amenities. A more elaborate shelter costing $3.5 million will open at Door Creek Park in the far east side. It has enclosed reservable space with a gas fireplace and kitchen facilities that will be available for use year-round.
In the spirit of March Madness, the NCAA's men's college basketball tournament, the city of Madison invites Southside residents to participate in a bracket format setting forth their preferred priorities for development in southeastern and southwestern neighborhoods. Set your brackets by going to the City of Madison's website and clicking on March Madness link.
Those were the headlines. And now, on to the rest of today's top stories.
Trailblazer and civil rights activist Vail Phillips broke countless glass ceilings in our state, and a new book is sharing her legacy with a younger audience. Students at Vail Phillips High School talked about their school's namesake and met the authors of her new biography of Wisconsin's great trailblazers of civil rights earlier today. WORT reporter David Ahrens was there.
4 years ago, the Madison School Board changed the name of James Madison Memorial High School to Vail Phillips High School. It seemed fitting that the name of a slaveholder should be replaced with the most renowned African-American fighter for civil rights in Wisconsin. But for some students, the person Vail Phillips may be as anonymous as a president from 200 years ago. Today, the author and illustrator of a new book about Phillips met with 7th and 8th grade students of Gillespie Middle School to talk about the process of writing the book and why it was important to them. One of the key tasks in writing a biography is to communicate the world in which Phillips lived. Segregation of races and exclusion of black citizens from all major social institutions was the rule. When Phillips attended the UW Law School, she was the only black woman. When she and her husband moved to low-cost student housing, the other resident students successfully petitioned for them to be evicted. Jerry Ann Hazlett described her inspiration for writing the book.
I found her to be the most fascinating person I had ever met. And why, I wondered, what was her magnetism? Who was she? And so I started looking up things about Vail Phillips, and I found a lot of articles and so forth, but I didn't really find out much in depth. Who was she? What made her tick? What was she passionate about? And why? So I began my quest to learn more about Vail Phillips. And she is a woman of firsts. You name it, and she was the first to do it.
As a black woman, Phillips faced the double burden of discrimination and exclusion. Phillips said, quote, "Generally, white people can eventually accept someone who is black, but the men never forget that you are a woman. Never, ever, ever," unquote. Aaron Boyd, the illustrator, described his motivation in his illustration of Phillips arguing for a fair housing law at a meeting of the Milwaukee Common Council.
But she was just so frustrated, and I admired her determination. She was not the only African-American there. She was the only woman there. And to pull and cajole these men, it always stuck with me that that's being brave. You're doing the right thing for the right reasons, even when people around you don't get it or don't care, and you stick with it.
Hazlett described and showed illustrations of two early experiences of racial discrimination against the young Vel Phillips. First, when she was told by a teacher that writing a speech on a serious topic was beyond her capabilities and that she should stick to comedy because that's what, quote, her people are good at, unquote. Then, when in college in Washington, D.C., she was escorted out of a segregated white church. Much of Phillips's activism focused on providing fair housing for all in Milwaukee. That city, like most, was subject to redlining race-exclusive districts. A middle school student explained the meaning of redlining.
It's kind of like segregation, and it can be like government. It can be like from the government, and like it's kind of, it can be where like neighborhoods are like segregated, where like one part is black and one part is white or different races.
Anne Hazlett noted that the work of an advocate like Phillips are rare victories, and that although progress in racial justice has been made, there's still a ways to go.
And so the fact is that Vel devoted her life to doing something about something she felt was not right. It may not have been totally all success and victory at the end of the road, but she was trying. In fact, one quote from her, she was talking to a history class at Marquette University years after she had retired from public life. And she was talking about the progress that, in fact, I think she was being asked questions, progress that black people had made. Isn't it wonderful? And she said, well, fat lady stood up, but she hasn't opened her mouth yet.
Even after death, Phillips added another first to her many broken glass ceilings, which include first woman and first African-American elected to Milwaukee Common Council and to a statewide office. Last year, she became the first black woman to have a statue placed on the state capitol grounds. This is David Ahrens for WORT News.
It's now 6:17 p.m., and you're listening to the live local news on WORT.
Sean O'Brien is the policy director at FAIR Wisconsin, a statewide LGBTQ+ advocacy organization. He's running this spring to represent Madison's Far East Side on the city council. The district's current alder, Jael Curry, isn't seeking re-election this spring, and O'Brien faces one opponent in Kim Richmond. Ahead of the election on April 1st, O'Brien sat down with our news producer, Faye Parks, to introduce himself to District 16 voters.
Hi, my name is Sean O'Brien. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm a candidate for District 16 Alder on the Far East Side of Madison. I've lived in Madison for my entire life, 26 years. I grew up on the East Side. I'm a proud Eagle Scout of Boy Scout Troop 34. I attended our city's public schools, and I currently serve as the policy director for FAIR Wisconsin, where I have worked for almost 5 years. I've worked with all levels of the government to make sure that folks' rights are protected, that they're treated fairly. And this has not been an easy job over the past few years, especially with the increasing levels of the hostility from our federal government. I also serve on the Richmond Hill Terrace Condo Association Board, and I've been involved in all of the neighborhoods that I've lived in, whether that was the Sassy neighborhood where I grew up, or the Richmond Hill Terrace Neighborhood Association. When I found out the seat was open, I wanted to throw my hat into the ring and try to fight for some positive change and fight for my neighbors.
So you mentioned this is an open seat this year. What inspired you to run for city council?
I wanted to throw my hat in the ring. I'm running because I love Madison. I've grown up with the city. I've seen it grow and change over the past 26 years. I mean, I remember when, you know, Sun Prairie and Madison were a 15-minute drive through the cornfields. And, you know, there's been a lot of change. And, you know, as I've been out talking to folks, as I've gotten to know my neighbors, I've seen that there are folks who are struggling. You know, the folks that I talk to, they work hard, and yet costs continue to rise, and I want to fight for them. I want to try to fight to make their lives a little bit easier, to make sure that nobody has to worry about having a roof over their head or being displaced from their community. That's not a reality for everybody. We're the fastest growing city in the state, and that presents us with a lot of interesting challenges and a lot of really unique opportunities. But I'm a problem solver. I always have been. I really like rolling up my sleeves and getting things done and finding creative solutions to some of the toughest challenges that are facing, whatever the situation might be. You know, my time in government, my time working in the Capitol, my time working in public service has really showed me the positive efforts and the positive change that government can bring. And I want to fight for that change, and I want to try to make people's lives a little bit easier. As I've said a couple of times, I'm an Eagle Scout, and I was always taught to leave this world a better place than when we came into it, and that's exactly why I'm running.
What is one specific achievement or policy that you would want to drive forward if elected in April?
I really want to make Madison more affordable. People work hard in Madison, but things are tough. Costs are continuing to rise. I notice it when I go to the grocery store. I notice it when I get my property tax bill. And it's one of the biggest reasons why I got into this race. I'm a young homeowner. I was just able to purchase my first home on the east side, but it was not an easy process. There were very few homes that were available to me that were in my price range. My parents, they're seniors. They're living on Social Security and a fixed income, and they have some pretty substantial health challenges. And I've seen firsthand the financial strain that exists on both ends, and we have to do something to address it. You know, I'm a big believer that no matter your age or income, you should be able to find a house, a place in Madison that you love and that you can call home. And that's a reality that just simply does not exist for everybody. And I want to try to find some new creative ways to lower costs across the board, reduce the burden on individuals. And also, you know, if we need to, provide more assistance programs where necessary, and making sure that we have that net, that safety for everybody if they do need further assistance.
Yeah, I'd like to talk more about housing, as it's perhaps the most complex and sprawling issue the city faces. It impacts everyone, from families trying to find an affordable home to college students trying to find affordable off-campus housing. A recent city report found that the income needed to pay Madison's median monthly rent without becoming housing cost burdened correlates to a full-time job, paying about $28 per hour or about $58,000 a year. This issue is so complicated, it's hard to know where to start. What do you believe is an achievable jumping-off point to address Madison's affordable housing crisis?
I think there are several options on the table. First, I think we need to start at looking at diversifying and increasing Madison's housing stock. I'm a big believer that we need to have all types of housing available to us. Everything from the big 15-story apartment buildings to the single-family homes, but we also really need to make sure that we're building and incentivizing the development of the missing middle housing. Duplexes, townhomes, four squares, you know, things that diversify the types of housing that are available and the neighborhoods. You know, we need to also make sure that we're continuing to incentivize development and incentivize affordable, truly affordable housing where it's suitable. And we need to make sure that we're prioritizing access to public services, public transportation, jobs, and keeping what opportunities that come with housing in mind when we're looking at developing housing. We also need to make sure that we're continuing to invest in the city's affordable housing fund and to help people get into houses in the first place. We also should fund programs that help people, once they get into the home, stay in homes. You know, that includes property tax assistance programs for seniors. That includes programs to help with utilities like MadCap. And there's a lot of other programs that are on the table there as well.
Madison voters faced an unusual choice in November and ultimately decided to say yes to a city funding referendum on the ballot that raised property taxes. Still, city finance leaders say the city's structural budget deficit is a chronic issue worsening over time. What is one way you would lead the city to address the budget deficit outside of raising property taxes again?
Yeah, I kind of see this as twofold. What is the short-term solution and what is the long-term solution? And I've said this before and I've said it again because it's the number one issue that I'm hearing when I'm talking to residents and when I'm talking to folks is that we have to lower costs. And I'm going to continue to talk about some of the programs that I really like and that I really support, including utility bill assistance through MADCAP and the property tax assistance programs for seniors. In the long term, we need to look at a better deal of shared revenue. We need to make sure that we are fighting for shared revenue. Right now, Madison gets $29 per resident. The average city gets $195 per resident. And so we are being starved of resources for partisan political reasons. And we absolutely have to find ways to increase the amount of money that we get for shared revenue. And that's one of the things that I bring to the table. I've spent years in the building, the state capitol, building relationships with legislators on both sides of the aisle. And I know that there's efforts being done already to increase the share of shared revenue that Madison gets. And I want to help be of extra voice in that.
Assembly Speaker Voss said in a recent interview that the shared revenue formula is fine and that he wants to take away the ability for local governments to depend on referendums at all. Can you describe in more detail what efficiencies or changes to the city's budgeting process you would support moving forward?
I mean, we've been asking the city to do more with less for a very, very, very long time. And the city is already incredibly efficient. I mean, there's always ways that we can improve on efficiencies. There's always more work that we can do. You know, some of these things that we can look at are potentially consolidating departments within the cities. I know that there are conversations that are happening surrounding that, potentially merging committees. Those are some of the solutions. There's also the possibility of incrementally reducing some services, but that'll also have an impact on the residents of Madison. We need to make sure that we are having conversations with the residents and folks who will be impacted if we do end up having to go down the path of reducing services. We also need to make sure that we're partnering with counties. We know that when there are folks who work together, we know that things increase in efficiency. We know that if we had access to a regional transit authority, that that would help make things easier. But we are preempted by the state on that. And so it's working with other municipalities around us to try to help reduce costs across the board.
I want to ask how you think about your role on the council. Alders have two priorities, to their constituents in their districts and to the city of Madison. Sometimes those priorities conflict. How would you handle an issue that drives forward the city's goals but is unpopular among your constituents?
At the end of the day, my biggest priority will always be the residents of District 16, to be a voice for the people who have elected me to be their representative. I don't necessarily believe that there is always a contradiction, that there is something that's better for the city versus what's better for the district. I believe that there is a significant amount of overlap in between what is best for District 16 and what is best for the city as a whole. I think we can eliminate a lot of this contradiction by making sure that we have access to the voices from District 16 and that they're being represented at the processes of government, and that I am also helping to uplift those voices, making sure that I am alerting neighborhood associations of ongoings with the city, making sure that I am meeting with the residents of the district. I really want to make sure that all the residents of the district are feeling the benefits of the new programs, of the services. You know, we're one city and we can't be overlooking entire portions of our community, and we're not. And we've been very successful in not overlooking entire portions of our community, and we need to keep that going. You know, I want to make sure that everybody in District 16 feels heard, feels seen, feels valued by our city, and that'll always be the most important job for me as Alder.
Sean O'Brien is running for city council this spring and faces one opponent in Kim Richmond, who previously ran for the same seat in 2021. Current Alder J.L. Curry isn't running for another term. You can learn more about Sean O'Brien on his website, seanformadison.com. That's S-E-A-N for Madison.com.
And you're listening to Handcrafted Local News here on WORT. Please stay with us. We've got lots more stories coming up.
Transparency Talk recaps the Openness in Government Awards. Fishy Business prepares for warm weather angling. And Forward Focus checks in with Madison's flamingos.
But first, we'll take a quick break, check in on some world headlines, and we'll be right back.
Thank you. YWCA Madison invites you to join them to celebrate the 22nd annual Circle Fundraiser on Thursday, March 20th at the Alliant Energy Center from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. YWCA Madison is eager to gather with their community of supporters to share stories that speak to who they are and demonstrate their values of humanity, community, growth, and restoration, which are at the heart of how they move as an organization. Attending the Circle fundraiser impacts the lives of thousands of women, children, and families who are served each year through YWCA's transformational programs in housing and shelter, employment and transportation, restorative justice, and learning and movement building. More information about the Circle fundraiser and other YWCA programs and resources can be found at ywcamadison.org. That's the 22nd annual Circle fundraiser on Thursday, March 20th at the Alliant Energy Center. Keeping you informed of community events and resources, this is WORT 89.9 FM and WORTFM.org.
BBC News with Stuart McIntosh. The United States has increased restrictions on Russian access to US payment systems for its energy and banking sectors as negotiations on a ceasefire in Ukraine continue. President Trump has welcomed Vladimir Putin's qualified acceptance of a deal, but said it wasn't complete after the Russian leader raised questions about how it would work. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky called Mr. Putin's response predictable and manipulative. Mr. Trump has repeated his ambition to annex Greenland and make Canada a US state. Ottawa has already insisted this won't happen. Greenland's prime minister said he'd summon party leaders to strengthen their rejection of the remarks. US shares have taken another battering with investors alarmed by Washington's trade policies. A major stock index, the S&P 500, has fallen more than 10% in the past 4 weeks. A US judge has ordered six federal agencies to reinstate thousands of recently hired employees fired as part of Mr. Trump's purge of the federal workforce. Judge William Alsup ruled that the dismissal of probationary workers was unjust. Armenia and Azerbaijan have agreed the text of a peace agreement ending more than three decades of conflict. Both countries said negotiations had concluded, but no date has been set to sign the deal. Figures released by NASA suggest that global sea levels rose by more than expected last year. The agency blamed an unusual amount of ocean warming combined with water from melting glaciers. The former president of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte, will make his first appearance before judges at the International Criminal Court on Friday. He's being held on murder charges linked to his war on drugs. A Ugandan and United Nations judge has been convicted in Britain of forcing a young Ugandan woman into slavery. BBC News.
Time is now 6:33, and you're listening to the live local news on WORT. I'm your host, Marcus Slayton, here with Christina Leffering. Thanks for joining us.
Last week, the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council held its annual Openness in Government Awards, or OPIES, at the Concourse Hotel during the Wisconsin Newspaper Association Conference. And though most awards caused celebration, at least one brought about a fiery speech from our very own co-host, Bill Leaders. On this edition of Transparency Talk, Leaders and Open Government attorney Tom Kamenick recap a year's worth of winners and a loser. But before we turn it over, our standard reminder that this segment isn't specific legal advice, but rather a discussion of general legal issues. If you have a particular legal issue, please consult an attorney.
Today is every other Thursday, which means it is time for Transparency Talk, the news program that you can see right through. I'm Tom Kamenick, the founder and president of the Wisconsin Transparency Project, a law firm devoted to open government. And I'm here today with Bill Leaders, president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council, a statewide group that promotes open government. Hello, Bill.
Hello, Tom.
Today, let's talk about the Openness in Government Awards, what we call the OPIES. These were presented last week at the annual convention of the Wisconsin Newspaper Association in downtown Madison. This year's winners included a police department, a couple of media organizations, and a contractor who has been blowing the whistle on a Wisconsin telecom company for 17 years. There also was one negative award that was given this year to the mayor of Madison, and we'll play some tape from that. So, Bill, let's start out with the award called the POPI, which stands for the Public Openness Advocate.
So this year we gave the POPI to the Milwaukee Police Department, especially its Sensitive Crimes Unit and its Records Division, for the assistance that it gave to a UW-Milwaukee journalism class, which was doing a project of looking into missing person cases from often decades back. They were provided with detailed records very promptly without redactions. Often police departments refuse to release any information about old cases, saying that they're open cases. No matter how long they've been open or how silly that is, it prevents them from developing new information and new leads to keep this information under wrap, but they do it anyway. In this case, they did the right thing, provided the records. The students did an excellent project called Missing in Milwaukee, and we gave them the police department this award.
We saw Milwaukee open up their Alexis Patterson investigation last year as well. Let's move on to the COPI for Citizen Openness Advocate.
This went to American Oversight. It's a liberal advocacy group that has for years fought to unearth records from the probe that was conducted by former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman into the 2020 election at the instigation of Donald Trump. This is a terribly botched probe that found nothing other than that Justice Gableman did not know what he was doing. And the case kind of concluded this year with the awarding of significant damages or recompense to the attorneys who brought the lawsuit against Gableman and his organization. Justice Gableman is additionally facing ethics charges from the Office of Lawyer Regulation, including some charges having to do with his lack of transparency.
Number three, the Media Openness Advocate Award, or the MOPI.
This went to the Wisconsin Examiner, the nonprofit news outlet that brought two lawsuits that came to a conclusion last year. One had to do with long delays in obtaining records that was filed against the Wauwatosa Police Department, and there was a separate lawsuit. The second case had to do with the Black River Falls City, which insisted on passing on huge costs, thousands of dollars it tried to charge for records to be located through a third-party vendor. Both of these were represented by a gentleman named Tom Kamenek, but in both cases, the municipalities backed down, the police department backed down, paid some damages to the examiner and its attorney, and promised to do better, or said that they made changes that would alleviate some of these huge charges in the future.
Next, we've got the Scoopy for the Open Records Scoop of the Year.
This went to a Milwaukee television station, TMJ4, which did a series of reports having to do with the Brady List. This is a list that prosecutors are required to maintain of law enforcement officers who have demonstrated some problems with credibility and should perhaps not be used as witnesses in proceedings. They're supposed to maintain this list. TMJ4 did a story in which this came into play, and one thing led to another, and it turned into a whole series of investigative reports about this list, its inadequacy. This is ongoing reporting that is now involved in Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and Wisconsin Watch, formerly the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. They're continuing to push for greater accountability from the District Attorney's Office of Milwaukee County with regard to these lists of officers with problem testimony.
How about we celebrate with the Whoopi for the Whistleblower of the Year?
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. There's an individual who is a contractor. He does auditing of telecommunications bills. 17 years ago, he brought a whistleblower complaint against Wisconsin Bell for overcharging schools and libraries. The whistleblower's name is Todd Heath, and the fight is ongoing, but last month, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled that his case could proceed. And so it's still ongoing, but he's achieved a significant win as that case moves forward.
Finally, we've got the infamous NOPI for the No Friend of Openness.
So this we gave to the mayor of Madison because of the remarks that she made on December 17th at a press conference the day after the horrible shooting at Abundant Life Christian School in Madison, where a teacher was killed, a student was killed, and the shooter, a student, took her own life. The mayor castigated the media in comments that were broadcast around the world, drew a tremendous amount of attention. I think it caused a great deal of hurt to the journalists in the room who were just trying to do their jobs. The mayor, Sacha Rhodes Conway, suggested that the press lacked human decency and that it was trying to feed off of the pain of victims and their families. So in giving the award, I kind of recalled that backstory and why we found that so objectionable and why we decided to give the award to this candidate over other potential worthy candidates who could have been recognized negatively for their work last year. So here's a bit of tape from my remarks at the award ceremony last week, Thursday.
I think it's because the press is tired of being kicked around. We're tired of being used by politicians seeking to score cheap political points, tired of being called the enemy of the people or derided for an alleged lack of fairness or accuracy, often by people who have absolutely no regard for either. There's not a reporter I know who is not more conscientious about getting things right than most politicians. Over the years, I think our default position as journalists has been to take it on the chin, to absorb the attacks, put our heads down, and keep doing our jobs. And I think it's time for that to end. I, for one, am never going to let someone put the press down for no good reason without pushing back. I am not going to allow other journalists to be disparaged because it's fashionable to do so. It's true that those of us in the press sometimes offend people in power and make a nuisance of ourselves by demanding openness and accountability. But we are not the enemy of the people. We are not the enemy of the police. We are not even the enemy of Mayor Rhodes Conway. We are professionals who deserve to be treated with respect. It's time that we started insisting on it.
A lot of victims just want their story told, Bill, and that's what journalists are there for.
Indeed.
And that's about all the time we have for today. I'm Tom Kamenek, joined here with Bill Leaders. Thanks to Sholly Pittman for producing. We will be back in 2 weeks for another installment of Transparency Talk, the news program that you can see right through.
Ice fishing is done for the year, and it's finally starting to feel a bit like spring. This week on Fishy Business, Nate Wiegehout and Pat Hansberg slow things down a little to help you prepare for the spring and summer fishing season. And if you can't wait that long, don't worry. There's still some fishing to be had in southern Wisconsin to tide you over until May.
Alrighty, I'm on the line now with Pat Hansberg here at the DNS Bait Shop here in Madison. Pat, it's finally starting to really feel like spring out there. And by spring, I mean it's going to be really nice a couple of days and then like down in the 30s and rainies the other days. But that does mean that the ice is pretty much gone around Madison for the most part. Am I correct in that?
Yes, you are. Yeah, we've had, some beautiful days. And of course, it's typical March weather where it's kind of a roller coaster with some of these temps. But for the most part, the ice is definitely not safe for fishing anymore. There is still some ice floating around out there. As of this recording, we have Lake Kiganza is wide open, as I understand. Lake Wabisa is maybe half-ish open. We got places like Cherokee Marsh here on the north side that's wide open. And Monona Bay, you know, one of the best bluegill fishing spots in the state, is also wide open. So there's definitely some shore fishing opportunities for folks. But this time of year, it's a lot of folks heading to the rivers. So that's kind of been the hot bite lately.
And we'll hit some of the shore fishing and the river fishing in a second here. But before we do that, you know, I like to take the spring as a time to sort of recenter myself and get everything prepared for the spring and the summer, especially when it comes to fishing, because I've put all my ice fishing gear away and I'm breaking out all of the spring and summer fishing gear back again. So, you know, when someone's looking to re-prepare for the summer and the spring and they're breaking everything out, what are some things that they can do to make sure that they're ready for when that nice day comes?
Well, you're right. This is the time of year when you're going to want to be getting out your stuff, dusting it off, and kind of taking an inventory of lures, hooks, sinkers, stuff like that. Make sure you have all the terminal tackle that you might need. Maybe make a little list. I get a lot of people come in the shop this time of year with a little list that they have, so they're, make sure they're ready when they get out on the water. Another good thing to do is, check your reels and check your rods, make sure everything's functioning. A lot of folks this time of year are coming in to the shop and getting their spools restrung. So, you know, line can eventually go bad. Every couple of years, it's a good idea to put some fresh line on so you're ready to go. And I guess if people do come into the shop to do that, I would recommend doing that sooner rather than later. It always gets really crazy around opening day. So, but yeah, just kind of taking an inventory, seeing what you might need and what you might want, and make a little list and make sure you got everything ready to go when the mood hits you.
I haven't tested my line quite yet, but I'm almost certain that I'm going to need to re-spool my line this year. It's been a little while, and I'm sure that I give it one tug and it will break on me. So that's what we need to do to prepare. But in the meantime, once we've prepared, there is still fishing to be had. It's March. There's fishing to be had. Let's start off with just Madison as a whole, looking at all of the lakes. I know that there is a shore fishing opportunity. So what's happening?
Yeah, that's right. There is a lot of shore fishing opportunities. Like I mentioned, there's quite a bit of open water here in the Madison area. Of course, game fish season is closed, so there's no fishing for walleye or northern pike right now. You can still fish for bass. All bass have to be immediately released until the first Saturday in May. But some good spots around town for especially panfish are up enjoying warm water. So you can check out Monona Bay. I know they've been getting some bluegills down there. Other areas for bass that are good, and bluegills, Cherokee Marsh is a good one. Basically, if you can find shallow water, that's where you're going to find most of your fish this time of year. They're enjoying some of that water that warms up earliest. So there's a lot of great opportunities around town, but like I said, a lot of folks heading to the rivers these days.
And let's hit some of those rivers, and let's start off with the Wisconsin River, head west a little bit. What are you hearing coming out of there?
Well, the rivers are all wide open, but most of your fish are concentrated right now at the dams. And I should also say that while game fish season is closed on inland lakes, you can fish game fish on rivers year-round. So a lot of folks are headed towards the dams. So Prairie du Sac Dam would be the closest dam to Madison. They're getting a lot of walleye and sauger that are stacked up there. They're kind of getting ready to spawn and do their thing. So what you're looking at right now is a lot of males, male walleyes that stack up there waiting for the females to arrive. So, and males tend to run a little smaller. So it's a lot of smaller fish, but some great action. But you'd find that same conditions at any dam all the way up the river. So Wisconsin Dells is good. Castle Rock Dam, Petenwell, all those are great spots. Also people heading over to the Mississippi River in the same spots. Any dam over there is going to be holding fish this time of year.
Now let's go in the other direction of Madison, head east a little bit, and let's talk about the Rock River. What are you hearing there?
Pretty much the same thing. You got anywhere you can find a dam. So the two dams down there that are big producers this time of year are the Indian Ford Dam, and then the Jefferson Dam is another very popular spot, but it's the same thing there. A lot of walleyes stacked up below the dam, getting ready to spawn.
And before we move into trout, which is its own thing altogether, are there any other rivers that we want to touch on this week about maybe send some people and say, hey, here's some stuff happening?
Well, there's always the Milwaukee area can be fantastic fishing this time of year. Steelhead, which are lake run rainbow trout, grow very large, swim up the rivers, and they do their spawning routines up in any of the tributaries that come out of Lake Michigan, the Milwaukee River, Menominee, Root River. Those are all great opportunities. It's a little bit of a different setup, but it's also, you know, it's a great fishery that, you know, typically you only find maybe out west or out east. And so we have it right here in the Midwest. So that's another great opportunity. But the bigger rivers, the Rock and the Wisconsin are pretty much where you want to be.
And if you've never tried the steelhead trout over in the Milwaukee area, I would recommend it. It's a lot of fun to go after those. And speaking of trout, what are you hearing about the trout bite?
Trout bite has been fantastic. So while the water might be running a little low for this time of year, we are pretty much done with dealing with any melt. So snow melt, especially on a warm day when you're getting a lot of melt, that cold water can actually slow the fish down as it drains into creeks. But we're done with that. We've got some beautiful days. I've heard about some great catches out there on the spinning. Of course, with trout this time of year, you can't use any live bait until after the first Saturday in May, and all fish have to be released. But it's a great time to get out and explore some streams. If you're on the spinning gear side of things, small spinners, jerk baits like Rapalas, countdowns or husky jerks are great options. And just working those slowly through some of the runs, because the water is still chilly, the fish are a little lethargic, But on the fly side of things, there's lots of bugs you're going to start to see hatching here, and fly fishing can be fantastic as well.
All righty, Pat, and that'll just about do it for today. Thank you for talking with me again this week. Remember, you can hear an update of Fishing Report anytime that you want just by calling one easy number. That's 608-BIG-FISH. Pat, thanks again, and good luck out there.
Always a pleasure, Nate. You too.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bernie's Rock Shop, located at 901 East Johnson, and our new shop, Bernie's on Park, at 636 South Park in Madison. We offer handmade silver jewelry as well as unique mineral, crystal, and fossil specimens from around the world. Store hours and more information available at berniesrockshop.com.
Support for this program comes from the Konopka Lab at UW-Madison. Recruiting adults 55 plus for a clinical trial, testing whether a medication can promote healthy longevity. Details are at 608-228-2978.
Forward Madison are set to kick off the 2025 USL League One season this Saturday in Naples, Florida, bringing back a large share of the squad from 2024. The Flamingos Director of Operations and Development, Keith Tiemeyer, joined Andrew and Grant this week to discuss the club's recently announced academy program. More now from Forward Focus.
Hello again and welcome to everyone listening to WORT Online and at 89.9 FM on your radio dial. This is another edition of Forward Focus, a segment devoted to any and all things Forward Madison FC, Wisconsin's only fully professional soccer team. I'm one of your hosts, Grant Peters, assistant editor for cultural and Forward Madison theme magazine New Dogmazine. As always, the editor of NDZ and the producer of Forward Focus is Andrew Schmidt. When we last joined you, Forward Madison were finishing up the 2025 preseason and did so this Saturday with a match against Drake University. Season ticket holders came out to Bree Stevens Field to enjoy the sunshine, take in the sights, and bear witness to some of the familiar faces and new ones as well that will grace the pitch this season. Fans also got to see a rotation-filled FMFC score two beautiful goals, courtesy of returnees Garrett McLaughlin and Juan Galindrez. Proving there are still some kinks to work out, though, defensive lapses led to two Drake goals and the match ended 2-2. This set the Flamingos up to start the 2025 regular season this Saturday in Naples, Florida. Before that, however, for this week's segment, Forward Madison's Director of Soccer Operations and Development, Keith Tiemeyer, came on to the most recent episode of the NDZ Live podcast to give his thoughts on Forward Madison joining Major League Soccer Next's new competition tier and what this means for soccer development in Madison. This included how the club plans to engage local soccer communities, including youth clubs, high schools, and aspiring young players. Andrew, take it away.
Pivoting over to, you had mentioned earlier, the new academy program in MLS Next. What excites you the most about Forward Madison joining this new competition tier that MLS Next is putting together? And what does this mean for soccer development in Madison?
Our motivations are a few different things. Number one, you know, being at UW as a coach there for years and being the father of a young soccer player at the time, that there's no question that there's talented soccer players in Madison. The issue is that they're split over multiple different clubs, whether it be the 56ers, the Rush, the Wave, Oregon, Wanakee, Sun Prairie, Middleton, here in the city with Cap East and other clubs. And I genuinely do believe that part of the development process for a young player is to play together with the better players as much as possible. And what happened, what I started noticing, and what we as a club and we as a staff, Aaron Holbein's actually sitting behind me right now as we get ready for this call tonight, what we've identified is that not only are the players here in Madison playing for different clubs and not getting together often enough, the best players, but also there's a bunch of players leaving our community to drive to Milwaukee, drive to Rockford, drive to end up living in Minneapolis or down in Chicago. And we're losing talent at young ages here. Right. And parents and families are making decisions to move their kids or to drive their kids 3 or 4 days a week, you know, over to Milwaukee to play. And how could we figure out how to keep those families and those players here in the area a little bit longer? Add to that the idea of activating our pyramid here of professional at USL League One. How do we help kids, maybe collegiately, maybe not? How do we keep them together longer here in Madison? And then the MLS kind of presented this platform here recently. I think it was announced back in December that it'd be their tier two of their MLS Next program. And, you know, is that a platform that's going to be recognized by families to say, with the toys that Bree Stevens has and with the coaching staff that that Forward Madison has, together with commitments maybe from some other players in the area here, and trying to get those players together and not, you know, provide an avenue here in this pyramid form here? Is this a better place to maybe try and develop for a season or two instead of driving somewhere else? And so that's really the goal of it. I genuinely do believe we need to get the best players together more often. It's amazing. You know, if I'm allowed to be a luxury player on my team and Grant's allowed to be a luxury player on his team and Andrew's allowed to be a luxury player on his team, we all end up playing the same position. We're the same age. And the next thing you know, we all end up being luxury players for our entire life. Well, at some point, if we would play together, I might realize that Grant's a better luxury attacking midfielder than I am, and I got to figure out how to play right back. And guess what? I might be a better right back than any other right back in the area. And now right. We're a better team, and we're developing mentally and we're developing technically into these positions that ultimately we probably all should each be playing.
What are the key priorities in setting up the academy in terms of like coaching staff, scouting, player recruitment facilities, on and on and on, you know?
You know, the priorities are these. Number one, it would be great if we can work with every club in town and respect the job that their coaches are doing at young ages and respect the the energy that they're providing to these players. We do believe that we have a pyramid that we can try and push kids through that will help motivate players that are at the higher levels. And we do believe we can build a coaching staff without stealing coaches from all the clubs in the area too. We happen to be making an announcement tonight that Patrick Niarko is interested in joining us, and we're really close to closing that deal, but he's given us permission to talk about it. Patrick had a 10-year MLS career. He was a pretty gifted player. Yeah. He was the coach of the two team at Chicago. It's actually how he ended up here in Madison. He's living here as a retired professional player in the Madison area and right now not coaching anybody. He wants to coach. He wants to be involved. And so you know, I think we could provide a coaching staff that's like no other. It really is about 20 players at each age group right now just on the boys' side. It's about playing one game on the weekend. It's about training three or four times during the week in advance of that game. It's about playing 30, 34 games a year. It's not about flying to Phoenix or flying to Florida and playing five games in 4 days, coming home, doing it again a month and a half later. It really is about the training. It's really about the technical standards. And then I think, like I said, I think we can add a terrific staff to that, and all under the idea that we want to have these kids stay in Madison for as long as possible and try and develop them as soccer players.
Forward Madison will open up the 2025 regular season on the road this Saturday, as they'll travel to Florida to take on USL1 newcomers Naples FC. Kickoff will be at 6 p.m. local time, and live coverage will be available on ESPN+. Fans will get their chance to help Forward Madison open up the 2025 U.S. Open Cup at Bree Stevens Field on March 20th, as play begins against Duluth FC. Kickoff will be at 6 p.m., and tickets are now available. Live coverage of the match will be announced at a later time, and we'll make sure to bring you those details when they become available. And that'll do it for this week. As always, we hope that you'll join us throughout this season as Andrew and I continue to keep you up to date on all the news, updates, and stories coming out of Bree Stevens Field as Forward Madison begins their quest for USL1 glory in the 2025 season. For WORT, this has been Forward Focus.
And that's a wrap for WORT's Live Local News at 6. Russ Mackey was your headline writer. Your reporter this evening was David Ahrens. Special thanks to feature contributors Bill Leaders, Tom Kamenick, Nate Wiggehout, and Pat Hansberg, and the Forward Focus crew. Nicole Alley engineered the show. Faye Parks produced this newscast. And Ms. Shali Pittman is the news director here at WORT. Thank you guys for listening. I am your host, Marcus Slayton.
And I'm Christina Leffring. Stay up to date with the WORT Local News Podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Up next is the Perpetual Notion Machine. Have a good night. You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison.
My guest tonight is Emmanuel Mayberg. Emmanuel is a veteran technology journalist and one of the founders of 404 Media, a digital media company exploring the ways technology is shaping and is shaped by our world. Emmanuel has written extensively about recent developments in the AI sector. Thanks for joining us, Emmanuel. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So to start out, the term artificial intelligence, or AI, has been around since the 1950s, encompasses a broad array of technologies,